So when we think about those things, like those rhythms actually being the lane that we run on, many of us are actually in the room because of gospel multiplication. So at one time or another, someone shared the gospel to you, whether it was someone on a stage who whose heart came alive to the gospel and now is helping other people encounter God's love, or maybe you joined Frontline because of a new congregation or a new C group. We're all in the room because of gospel multiplication. And because that's true, it's actually, I think it's helpful to remember that multiplication is not Frontline's idea. It didn't sound like just a good thing to put before love God, love people, and push back darkness. It's actually God's idea. And I think that's helpful because if we can first get confronted with who God is and what he's like and what his mission is, it makes everything that he'd invite us to do possible. That by the Spirit's power, he says in Matthew 28 that he's going to empower us to make disciples of all nations, to baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, that we become people that could actually teach others what he taught us, and that we would remember that he's with us even to the end of the age. And then I think it's helpful that Revelation 7 actually gives us a picture of, like, hey, what does the Great Commission inevitably look like? What if we caught gospel multiplication? What would it look like? John says it's going to look like this: a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes with palm branches in their hand, crying out with a loud voice, "Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb." So multiplication, gospel multiplication, really is the Spirit's work that's driving towards the New Jerusalem. When we talk about multiplication, what we're talking about is making room for the outsider for sure, but it's also a priority that the insiders are actually known and walking in discipleship. One of the things that break my heart is just like really large groups that stay inconsistent because there's no accountability structure at all. It's really easy for me to miss a community group in a room this size with this many people because you're not really going to notice if I'm there. It's really easy to stay inconsistent in a group when you're not missed, when you're not there. And so when we think about, it's for the outsider for sure, but it's also so that the insiders actually are experiencing the priorities of our groups. So when we think about a family meal or discipleship group, we're actually contributing on mission together. Those things all aim at that. So when we talk about multiplication, our rhythms of gathering are actually the lane that we would drive on, so to speak, towards multiplication, which just brings up the fact. Hello, Miss Shelby. This brings up the fact that if your group's engagement in the rhythms of gathering are either half-hearted or half-planned, multiplication will always feel like an enemy to discipleship, and it will primarily and only bring up anxiety. If your group sometimes likes discipleship group and sometimes likes fellowship with talk therapy, if your group sometimes likes the idea of family meal and slow, unhurried time for relationships to get developed, but sometimes actually just like Bible studies, we're always going to look at multiplication as like an enemy to deep relationships and discipleship. It'll never be the thing that it actually exists for, which is for insiders and outsiders to have a place of discipleship, care, and mission. So this leads us to a good question. If multiplication is God's idea, could I ask an honest question of why does it feel so anxiety-inducing? If it's God's idea, why does it just feel uncomfortable? I remember in that S&B burger joint, when I thought our community group director at the time asked everyone to split and to no longer be in a relationship to each other and to only prioritize more butts and seats in living rooms. If I thought about how I encountered the like talk about multiplication, I only heard it through the negative of this is going to change the good thing. Why is it so challenging? I think primarily it's challenging because we step on landmines in our people and in us that we did not know that are there. If we knew all the things that would come up in our people or in us as we walk towards this, we'd avoid them. We wouldn't like knowingly try to step on people who are just now coming to a community group for the first time after their old life group at their old church fell apart because of a divorce. And now they come to us, and 3 months into us, we were processing multiplication with them. And they're like, hey, this is that again. I will not have any part in that. We wouldn't step on that. It doesn't mean we wouldn't step on or we wouldn't walk towards multiplication, but we wouldn't try to knowingly step on those sort of things. But because those things come up, it's actually helpful for us to name some common barriers or things that come up in my chest as I've experienced multiplication, and then things that I've heard or processed with leaders. Here's just a few. Hey, we just started to go deep in our relationships, and if that changes, we'll have to start all over. We haven't had this before, and now we do. If we have to change that, that's not going to be good. Hey, why don't we just keep our group closed and other people can go to other groups? Hey, I've been through a bad one. I don't think we should walk towards one. I've been through a bad one. This is like the person that tries out church is like, I've been to a bad one. It's like, okay, you've been to one church. Hey, we can't multiply because when we try to raise up other leaders, if I'm honest, I just feel too busy. And sometimes it's actually easier to take care of all the details of group leadership on my own rather than raising up other people to lead them. Or nobody actually offers to help or lead. And if they do offer and I do give something away, often the ball gets dropped. I think this one's actually more true and more in our chest than we think it is. But like, hey, if I'm honest, I don't know how to actually lead other people. I don't know how to not just like give them things to do, but actually slowly teach and train them. If the Great Commission isn't just like, hey, go and tell people about that God loves them a whole lot and did some things for them, but it's actually about also teaching them to observe the ghosts in the elevator, teaching them actually observe what he taught, to slowly say, hey, we're going to do things together, and then we're going to talk about them, and then we're going to do them again, but then you're going to lead them, and then we're going to talk about them. But if there's just an on-ramp for leadership development in our groups, it starts to name the thing of like, oh my goodness, we're doing what Jesus invited us to do. So when I think about all of those barriers or hesitations, often I think about they under-prioritize the three reasons that we gather in community. They under-prioritize discipleship, and they under-prioritize care, or they under-prioritize mission. When we stay cynical, when we stay frustrated with multiplication, we actually lose those things in the process. Because here's the truth. We cannot predict or force a healthy multiplication. I think that's just helpful to receive. Like if you're an apprentice or a leader or a hub leader, you don't get to decide or control how people respond to things. And the good news is you're never supposed to. Like if you're just trying to manage people's anxieties, that's like you're missing it. because those things will come up, and because if you're a leader that people know are safe, you probably are going to get the worst of people. This is like my sweet four-year-old who like is the worst with me. there's someone in the room that like lovingly gives their time away to watch my boys. And they talk about how amazing he is at their house all the time. And I show up and I get punched in the face when I tell him we need to leave. And I'm like, is he this bad for everyone? It's like, no, just the place he feels the safest. And it's like, let's just start to expect that those anxieties will come up in our people because like they love and trust you. And that's a good thing. If we're going to walk them towards Jesus and not just try to play mama hen that like keeps them safe, that we should get their worst at times. Don't pray for their worst to come out. That's not necessarily an endeavor that I enjoy. Like I would really love to be told that I'm now an enemy to their discipleship or care. Like that's not what we're doing. But let's just start to expect those things. So because we cannot control how others respond, but we can cultivate health by calling our group members to Jesus, his mission, and the three priorities of community group, I want to remind us what those priorities are. And so this is the first paragraph on the first page of your handout, and it comes from pages 30 to 34 of your handbooks. And if you don't have one, we brought some extras up here to actually give you as a gift. But this is why we multiply community groups, and this is helpful. We're going to start with a why, and then we're going to name those three priorities. This is a condensed version, and so I'll just name the priorities at the very end. Frontline exists to multiply gospel communities that love God, love people, and push back darkness. Through multiplication, we are able to better make disciples, care for others, and advance the kingdom. We multiply so that we can proclaim the gospel and demonstrate the kingdom to more people who desperately need it. We do not aim to multiply as an end in itself. In other words, our goal is not to launch as many groups as possible. Rather, our community groups multiply for discipleship, care, and mission. If we are to form and sustain healthy groups, multiplication will play a crucial and necessary role. Multiplication is a very big deal in itself, but what we multiply really matters too. So as you prepare for multiplication, do some soul searching and ask yourself if your community group is faithfully committed to our vision, goals, rhythms, and ultimately the gospel. Talk with your hub leader about how you can point your group back towards health as needed. I like that one. It's like as needed, as if it's like, you know, it's like it'll always be needed. Hey guys, remember the main thing. When we over prioritize one of these things, we actually lose discipleship. When we stay cynical towards multiplication, we lose these three things in the process. So those three things are: we multiply for discipleship, care, and mission. So multiplication really does lead to increasing our capacity as followers of Jesus to walk in discipleship, care, and mission with others. So when we stay resistant towards multiplication, if our people are resistant towards multiplication, we actually begin to separate ourselves from those priorities and we get something else. This is the people that maybe come to our community group or have been to another one that are just like, man, discipleship wasn't happening. Or it turned into just a lopsided thing where we only cared about mission and nobody was formed. We had no life to speak from. Or we only did really Christian self-help where we all managed our image before God and left generally unchanged because we still were unconcerned with the outsiders. One of those things eventually will get lost in the process if we stay resistant to multiplication. So if I think back to that original community group in 2016 that was asked to walk towards multiplication, when I was asked that the guy that would become my best man in my wedding for us to lead separate groups, that was generally frustrating for me. For the first adults that I started to be known by or feel cared for to now be multiplied and put into different living rooms. When I think back to that experience, I would have never experienced a depth of relationship with the new group that I had. The multiple sets of leaders that came out of that one group would not have been raised up. The baptisms that we've celebrated in the years since and the mission that has flowed out of those would not have happened. Would rather have probably been untrue. Those things would not have been true if we did not, by the Spirit's power, take courage in our hearts and actually walk towards multiplication. So multiplication really should be cause for celebration, but we can absolutely and should hopefully party with tears in our eyes. If like the group that you're multiplying out is just super happy to leave, man, we might need to investigate, man, like what's going wrong, you know? I've been a part of multiplications where it's like, man, I just really can't stand Susan. And I cannot wait to get part and be led by someone other than Susan. And it's like, oh man, you should not multiply then. You should figure out how to love and walk with Susan. You should stay with Susan. We might multiply you with Susan, just you and her. And you guys will learn how to walk in community together. So all of this leads to the main question of how do we walk towards multiplication? If you're walking towards multiplication this semester, or you're a brand new C group leader or apprentice and just want to have a vision for multiplication because that's really helpful, what do you do? This is a handout also in your packet that I'm just going to breeze through, but it's actually just the how of multiplication. It's a simplification and a generalization that I would love for us to get into when we need to in Q&A, but it seeks to give you a vision of what a process would look like ideally. So the how do we walk towards multiplication? You start by talking about it. This is actually helpful. Hopefully your group members do not encounter multiplication for the first time on the night you multiply. Hopefully it begins to be something that you talk about, that you have a vision for, that you would actually cast vision for your group members to have capacity to walk in discipleship, care, and mission with each other. I think my wife and I can know, and she was saying this, her discipleship group is 5 ladies, and then she's a hub leader of another 4 ladies. And I think she's at max capacity to know well, to think about and be able to pray for, and generally have some semblance of a relationship, you know, from a monthly coffee or whatever. She's really tapped out. And so the moment you have at least that many people in a group, you at least need to be processing. Man, if they're going to not just have to do hey, Jasmine, it's great to catch up again every family meal, but actually be like, hey, I know the depths of Jasmine's soul. And I can begin to pray for her on the spot. And I naturally would know that when she's fine, she's not. And she would trust me enough to be able to say that, hey, you're not fine. Will you stop saying that? If all those things are true, we actually have a capacity for those things. So we need to give our group members a vision that though this is really fun, a room this size is really fun for the extroverts. it has surpassed our capacity to actually know each other well, to move each other towards Christ likeness, or to actually gather regularly and share life with. If you all invited me to your kids' birthdays, I would be a really sad man. I would feel frustrated that I have to go. I would feel obliged that I have to go. But if six of you invited me, I maybe would attend. There was a time that that group that I originally started would have like birthday parties and hangs, and we're going to go to Groovies again. Don't go to Groovies. It's a bad time. Unless you love disco and people that smoke in bars. I was tired of going to Groovies because we had a birthday every week, and I was like, I went one or twice, and I was like, that's enough. That's definitely enough for Groovies. Eventually, I don't have a capacity to love you enough to care about your birthday. I'm so sorry. So give them a vision for it. So the emphasis is actually not on multiplying groups. You're welcome for that Groovies thing. If you don't know what Groovies is, that'll be part of your handbook at the end. The emphasis is really not on multiplying groups, but multiplying disciples who make disciples. It's the Great Commission in mind as we walk towards it. So we talk about it to make it a normal part of our culture. Hey, it's actually not a bad thing. It's just a normal thing. And it reminds us that we're on the lane that is we at least would know our group is healthy. Some groups will multiply in a year or two. Some groups will multiply in 3 to 5 years. Some groups may never necessarily have to, but really if they're raising up other leaders, might walk towards multiplication. But there's really not a moralization of timeline. But just to know that multiplication inevitably shows us health. So practically, it's actually good to find what a community group needs and what a multiplication size dynamics would look like. And so it starts with having leaders, one male, one female leader, a host home, ideally different, but not always having to be different from the leader's home. And a plant team really should not be less than 7 people. There's a few times that some really socially like attuned and generally like others focus, I've seen two couples start a group brand new and it actually be okay. But often if you're less than 7, it takes a sickness once or twice to happen to where like, oh man, we actually haven't gathered in, 6 weeks. And so less than 7, I would really wonder about like, man, is there a clear semblance of who you're going to be leading? But at least 7 people. So the process of multiplication could be drilled down as done best by shared responsibilities within the group and identifying and raising up apprentices. And this is actually following Paul's encouragement in Ephesians 3 to see and receive leadership in the church and to actually see discipleship as equipping others to do the work of ministry. So a type of ministry where everyone contributes. I always would at least see a lack of leadership development as more of a discipleship issue than a leadership issue. So if there's no desire in your group for other people to take any responsibility at all, I'd say there's actually not just like nobody wants to do anything. And there's a few instances maybe where, yeah, people are in really hard seasons, but really it's probably a discipleship issue where you don't regularly call people to Jesus. You probably just offer an ear, which is great. That's a real gift to people. But often having other people present to share responsibility shows that discipleship is actually happening. So once you've identified apprentices, what do? You connect them to hub leaders and you have them begin the launch process. This recently happened where like an apprentice that just got named went through the whole launch process outside of actually launching. And I'm like, great, you need to now just like apprentice for a season. But it's actually, that was not like a bad thing. It's like they're now ready. And for 6 months, they've just been walking and getting trained by their leaders. That's never really happened often. And so the fact that someone would walk through the whole onboarding process, come up, become aware of areas that they either theologically or even philosophically need to grow, that started in June are still in the apprenticeship stage. That's going to be a leader that feels really equipped and trained. And then you would actually, after apprentices have actually been taught and equipped, you need to announce the date of multiplication. And ideally, I think 2 to 3 months out is a good time. So if you need to multiply potentially in April or May, I think processing it right now would be a good timeline. Hey guys, I want to remember and give you a why. We actually have like in part of your handbook is like, hey, how do you talk to your group about multiplication? And you could read it together. You could print out that page or a page like it, and you could just help everyone remember the why. And I would say consider your hub leader's recommendation on a date and process that your apprentices would feel comfortable with, and then announce it. So if you can and should multiply, be sure to announce it. Then have members decide geographically and pray to be obedient to Jesus. I would say, like generally speaking, if you're driving past other groups to be a part of a group, we really would want you to become aware of that. And it doesn't mean you have to change it right away, but help us like practice being good missionaries to our physical neighbors. And that's a big deal because I'm part of a group that has people driving past other groups, and that's not a bad thing by any means. It just isn't the thing that I think begins. Well, plainly, once you have kids, I think that'll stop, or generally you feel at least challenged to be like, man, I have to drive 20 minutes with a screaming child at 8 p.m. I now will only go to a group that starts at 4:30 p.m. so that I can get back by bedtime. Geography really matters, and so we want to prioritize that, and we want to set actually both groups up for health. And so take that into consideration, you know, especially in like really dense areas. Like if you're driving past a group, I don't want you to moralize that. But there really needs to be a vision for a place and a people and a sort of the city that you feel like, man, our group can actually meet a need in this area. So build a small core team for each community group, an existing one and for the new one. There's something about launching a group out where those that are like the original group, maybe led by the same people, now feel like, oh gosh, what do we do? It's actually good to see it as two new groups with two new needs for apprentices and different roles. So take into consideration when you're multiplying geography, relationships, how your discipleship groups are currently established, the gifting, and then consistency. It's actually not helpful to be like, hey, everyone that's inconsistent and generally sees community group as, you know, I will go there if I have time. Don't put them all in a group together. It's actually good that Paul commands for us to like make room and to put courage in the faint-hearted. He talks about us actually pursuing the weak. And so the strong or those that are always there, it's actually helpful to think through, man, though it would maybe we would feel missed by not having them in the room, they're going to help carry the burden of the inconsistent. So this multiplication actually begins by talking about it, and it leads us to identifying and raising up potential leaders, which is going to lead us to a delegation handout that you guys have. And so find that delegation handout. There are a full list of responsibilities that I want you to look at, but what I want for our time is actually for you to look at the back side of it, and it should have questions on the back. Does it? Abby, would you read those questions out? I want you to get in groups of two or three and begin to process for the next few minutes those questions together. Abby's going to read them for us. We're going to take some time for those three questions, and then we're going to come back together for some Q&A. Sound okay? Okay, Abby, go ahead and read them. Great. Hey, if you have people close to you, if not, move towards a row that does and take the next 5 or so minutes, process those questions, and then we'll come back together.